It's E-Commerce Minute, your weekly dose of e-commerce, tech, and retail news with your hosts, John Suter, Bart Meraz, and Brittany Blackman. The E-Commerce Minute is a production of Sumo Heavy, a digital commerce consulting firm in Brooklyn, New York, and Philadelphia. Find us on the web at sumoheavy.com.
It's E-Commerce Minute, episode 770.
These are the top stories in e-commerce, tech, and retail news. Our first story, Walmart turns 4 stores into e-commerce labs. Walmart is turning 4 of its stores into laboratories that test ways to turn the company's huge physical footprint into a more powerful edge for e-commerce. The stores will be transformed into living test centers where employees will use digital tools, store design features, and different strategies to speed up and improve the preparation of online orders, as well as improve customer experience. Walmart says that it's designating 2 stores as test centers near its Bentonville, Arkansas HQ, as well as 2 others that will be announced later. Even before the pandemic fueled e-commerce growth, the big box retailer had made moves to align its online and e-commerce strategies, such as merging separate teams of buyers. So here's what they're actually doing. They're going to test an app that uses augmented reality to scan multiple boxes in the back room rather than one at a time as they move them to the store floor. They'll use new store signage and handheld devices to cut down the time it takes to pick an online order. Product and technology teams will be based at the stores to accelerate the pace of prototyping. And Walmart will also try to better sync up its apparel assortment at the test stores. For instance, some apparel is currently not listed online. If the store and the website have the same shirts or sweaters, customers have more ways to get these goods, such as retrieving them through curbside pickup or having them shipped to the home. The company also said it will tinker with the checkout area too, testing designs, hardware, and software that make customers' purchases faster, easier, and more contact-free. Pretty cool. I would not want to work in this store.
No, absolutely not.
My analogy was I used to work for Toys R Us years ago, and we always felt sorry for the store that was nearest the headquarters because that was the guinea pig store. That's where all the testing was. But it was also the cleanest, best run store in the chain because it had to be.
Like, I'm surprised they wouldn't put him like all over the place, right?
Yeah, I think they're just doing a little test here, and then they'll probably roll this out in a broader fashion.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, first of all, e-commerce labs, the Walmart e-commerce labs have been one of the best labs out there, which is crazy from an e-commerce perspective, like technology perspective.
What was that called? Walmart Labs?
Walmart 37 or whatever they're calling it.
Area 54 or whatever the heck it was called. They don't really mention that anymore. It's not really it's just called Walmart Labs now.
Yeah, because if you look at it, it's all they absorb all the other companies like Bonobos and all that guys. But from a technology perspective, they've been amazing, which, you know, if you're not insider of this world, you wouldn't know. The store thing is kind of cool, but like you said, being near Arkansas at the headquarters, it's going to be interesting.
Sure will. I mean, obviously Walmart's advantage over, you know, their rival Amazon is their store network, and they're kind of leveraging that for e-commerce. I mean, they have over 4,700 physical stores and more. And here's their other advantages. Their last mile advantage is that more than 90% of Americans live within a couple miles of a store. So they're going to turn these stores into shipping hubs. Makes total sense. But talk about they're following the Amazon playbook of just tweaking efficiencies. The one thing I keep reading is they say small interventions can make a difference to increase efficiency. For example, employees who pick hard-to-find products find it 20% easier to find them through better area designations and if they carry a mobile device that shows them the way. Signalization and technology are therefore some of the innovations that the retailer is trying out in the laboratory stores. So they're doing the Amazon playbook where it's like, we're going to count the steps it takes for you to pick and pack this order.
Yeah, I don't feel I mean, if you look at Walmart itself, they're all technology and logistics driven. So for them, they know everything. So it's not, you know, they're really good at this.
Absolutely. Walmart's e-commerce sales nearly doubled in the second quarter ended July 31st. And even before the global health crisis, the company focused on using its numerous stores as an advantage over Amazon and other competitors. All right, we're going to move on to our next story, also Walmart related. Walmart scraps in-store robots. We did a story about this a long time ago. Walmart is ending a contract that had shelf scanning robots in some 500 of their stores. Apparently, the retailer found that humans could do the job just as well. Walmart began using robots supplied by Bossa Nova Robotics in 2017 with initial deployments in 50 locations. The mobile robots would simplify routine work in stores using machine vision to scan shelves and identify what products need restocking. Why exactly Walmart is ending the partnership is unclear, though it seems the global pandemic had an effect. As more shoppers flocked online delivery and pickup because of COVID-19, Walmart has more workers walking the aisles frequently to collect the online orders, gleaning new data on inventory problems. It found different, sometimes simpler solutions that proved just as useful. Man, that's a hard word. Additionally, the Wall Street Journal says that Walmart's U.S. Chief Executive John Furner had worries about what customers would think seeing robots in the company stores. They waited 3 years to have that thought. Earlier this year, Bossa Nova said it planned to expand to 1,000 Walmart stores. But according to the Wall Street Journal, the end of the contract has had a big effect on Bossa Nova, with the startup since laying off 50% of its staff. A spokesman for Bossa Nova speaking to TechCrunch would not deny or confirm the Walmart news, but admitted that the company had been forced to streamline, that's in air quotes, its operations as a result of the COVID-19 outbreak.
That's a good doublespeak there.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for Bossa Nova, but it's one of those things where you were trying to solve a problem and maybe the solution was worse than the problem itself. And they realized that these robots, reading between the lines, as I'm sure there was, managing this equipment was not easy. And I think there is a negative aspect of robots roaming stores. I'll give you for instance, we have the local grocery chain here in the Northeast, Giant. They have these dopey robots floating around. And
Marty.
Yeah, and you can tell the customers aren't really crazy about it. It's the thing gets in the way. They put big googly eyes on the top of it to make it more human.
I think he's cute.
It's cute, but I don't understand why they really need that. And I think in most of the time, in my experience, the thing just gets in the way. I don't know. I mean, I'm all for technology and automation, and I love robots. But I think in this instance, especially when you're in a crowded store and you've got this robot that you can't just like push your cart into it and make it move like you do with humans. Walmart was one of the biggest adapters of this technology, and that's a big signal to the rest of retail in that, maybe this type of thing will slow down or adapt, meaning maybe we won't have these giant robots, but maybe there'll be something smaller or something else.
You definitely won't have giant robots.
Definitely will not have the giant robots roaming.
And here's stores. The reason. It's called it's Amazon, buddy. Look at what Amazon's doing with their grocery stores and their Go stores.
Yep.
True.
That's where all the stuff is going to go, like shelves that have technology in it with cameras and stuff like that. They'll know exactly where stuff is.
Yeah, no, good point. And as the price of technology comes down, the Amazon Go concept, I'm sure, will become more ubiquitous, and they will find more efficient ways to do that. Because as we reported on the original Amazon Go stores, the amount of tech in these stores was pretty ridiculous. And we've seen some other competitors come out with, either the smart carts or other ways to scan the shelves. And a company like Walmart is going to be on the edge of this. And they're going to say, we don't need this 1,000-pound electric robot scanning shelves. There's an easier and cheaper way to do it. So very interesting. Sucks for Bossa Nova, but them's the breaks. That's business. For our next story, Stripe launches Stripe Climate. Last year, payments giant Stripe announced that it would donate $1 million of its own fund annually into companies that are building technology to remove carbon from our environment, with the recipients of that investment announced in May of this year. Now it's expanding that commitment with a new product aimed at getting its customers to invest too. The company is launching Stripe Climate, a new tool that companies using Stripe can integrate to set up automatic contributions that are made as a percentage of each transaction. The company can set the percentage itself, with the proceeds feeding into an add-on pot. Currently, there are four companies on that investment list. Carbon Cure, which collects carbon dioxide and recycles it. Climeworks, which is building carbon removal plants. Project Vesta, which has worked on projects like Green Sand to remove carbon on beaches. And Charm Industrial, converting waste biomass to bio-oil. Now, these companies are earth shots, as it were, not completely proven tech that might be too costly to run if it does work, because that's how these things go. But as with moonshots, there will be a lot of capital needed to see how and if they can get it off the ground. For now, companies using Stripe Climate don't get a chance to choose how their contributions get invested. They basically mirror and follow the path of those being made by Stripe itself. Stripe Climate is free to use, and Stripe said that the 25 companies testing the service in a closed beta, includes companies like Flexport, Substack, Flipkaws, and OpenShow, have already contributed hundreds of thousands of dollars to the effort. Right now, Stripe Climate is only open to US-based Stripe users, but they're looking to expand the program internationally. As a merchant, you can let customers know about your commitment with a spiffy badge embedded on checkout. A great visual, especially if your audience is eco-conscious. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of tech companies are doing that. Obviously, Apple is one of the biggest trying to do this carbon neutral thing. Shopify has it built in into their shop app, which is kind of interesting. So
that we've reported on all these other types of companies that are following suit. And it is interesting you mentioned Apple, because I think Apple is obviously the leader in this. And you, we watch their keynotes, and there's always a good maybe 20% of that where they talk about their eco efforts, whether it's recycling all the aluminium or solar powering their spaceship office, which is, you know, this really cool place. I would love to go there someday. But it's interesting that they're following Apple's playbook, because I think a lot of companies, if given a choice, obviously wouldn't do it, but the PR looks great. And Britt, you're better to speak at this than us crusty old fellows are, but we feel that consumers now, especially younger consumers, are more cause conscious and eco conscious, and really, you know, might think for a beat about where they put their dollars. What's your opinion on that?
Ethically sourced materials, ethically sourced to anything, is all the rage right now. I mean, if you look at the stats of even something as simple as like thrifting, I mean, it's on the rise. Thrift stores can't keep like inventory on the shelves like quick enough.
And the prices of thrift stores have risen too, much to my dismay.
Yeah, there's that vintage place on South Street. Sweater's like $70. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Now we're trying to get ethically sourced materials and recycled materials, and you're going to make us spend $70 for it?
$70 on a sweater that probably wasn't priced at $70 when it was first put out.
Yeah, literally like a Liz Claiborne 1982 sweater. Like, relax. But yeah. Sustainability, baby. We're trying to save this planet. So it all makes sense. These tech companies and their green moves all make sense.
Yeah, baby. One chunk at a time.
Yep.
That's right.
All right. Our next story. Amazon crushes Q3 earnings. Amazon crushed its Q3 earnings as gross revenue rose 37% year over year. Even so, the Amazon stock fell more than 1% due to Amazon's guidance in Q4, predicting less profit due to COVID-19 costs. Of course, these stats are from last week, so it probably has shifted since then. Amazon reported adjusted earnings per share of $12.37, which beats the street's expected earnings of $7.48. Amazon provided a wide guidance on Q4 with expected total Q4 revenue between 112 billion with a B and 121 billion with a B. That's a big margin of billion there. Boy, that is some big numbers. Amazon said its operating profit would likely drop in Q4 to somewhere between 1 billion and 4.5 billion. Another wide range, but that is well beyond the 5.8 billion that analysts has estimated. I'll skip over the rest of this stuff. Here is some actual really cool stats, though. Revenue generated per minute by company. Amazon generates $725,393 per minute. Apple generates $488,376 per minute. Google generates $348,732 per minute. And Facebook coming in behind with $162,289 per minute. That's insane. Breaking down some of Amazon's revenue, this is, you know, my prediction is that AWS will spin off at some point. Revenue from AWS jumped 29% to $11.6 billion. Physical store sales, which includes Whole Foods, fell about 10% to $3.78 billion. And Amazon's advertising business, the new up-and-comer, is now $5.4 billion in revenue, up 51% year over year. That is going to be that's their new AdWords. That's their new, watch out for that. Watch out for the Amazon.
Yeah, that thing is going to be absolutely insane for them.
Yep. So once the government gets their acts out, I see the ad division and AWS being spun off, maybe even the physical store part being spun off, but that's a long way down the road. Amazon subscription services, which includes revenue from Prime, rose 33% to $6.58 billion in revenue. And finally, sales from third-party sellers grew 55% in Q3. And on Prime Day, which technically happened in Q4, third-party sellers had over $3.5 billion in sales and almost 60% year-over-year increase from the previous year's event. I'm sure some of that, or maybe even most of that, is COVID-19 related, but at any measure, these are some giant numbers.
And they laughed at him when he tried to sell books out of his garage.
on his desk made of a door with a spray-painted sign, and he drove a Honda Accord or something like that. PayPal also reported revenue of $5.46 billion in Q3 2020, up 25% year-over-year. The company's profits stood at $1.2 billion, with a 42% year-over-year increase. So all these guys are kicking butt. PayPal also announced, if we want to talk about this, they're going to accept crypto on PayPal.
Yeah. I mean, they accept everything else. They own everything else, basically.
It's true.
I mean, they own Venmo and Braintree, and where all the basically all the credit card processing is done by them now.
Oh, wow. I didn't even realize the sweep.
Oh, yeah. They own all that stuff.
And while we're still talking about Q3 revenue, we might as well talk about Shopify. Their revenue in Q3 grew 96% from $390.6 million in 2019 to $767.4 million. Shopify generated $191.1 million in net income in Q3. A year earlier, it had a net loss of $72.8 million. That is insane.
Basically, the pandemic was like a thing for them.
As they say, the pandemic was a catalyst for companies like this, especially for Shopify. And taking that entrepreneurial, I'm trapped in my house, I'm going to start something. Well, where does everyone go when they want to start something? They put up a store on Shopify. So it'd be interesting to look a year from now when you see, when Shopify says total store count of how many dead stores are out there from people who had a bright idea while trapped in quarantine.
I've had like 25 ideas.
I have 100 ideas. So. My hard drive is littered with just half-baked ideas. If only... maybe I should start an incubator and just pass these ideas off to some young student and say, here, try to make something of this, please.
My notes app is like notes at 3 a.m. that say like super random things like pumpkin, picture frame, pillow, controller, like just random arrays of words from ideas I have at 3 a.m.
You know what? That's how it starts. That's how a germ of an idea starts.
Very true.
Very true. All right. And finally, to wrap up this financial news, we had some breaking news. On Tuesday, Chinese fintech giant Ant Group, which is part of Alibaba, suspended their $34 billion IPO, which was set to be the biggest IPO in global history. The announcement came one day after an impromptu closed-door meeting held between Chinese regulators and Ant's top executives. An official explanation was not provided, but sources say it's related to new draft regulations related to online microlending that were just introduced by Chinese regulators the day prior. Way to stick a stick in the spokes of Ant Financial's IPO. Gee, like nobody saw that coming. That's really... And for our final story, the McRib is back. Mm.
Somebody call Homer Simpson.
All right. So the McRib, it looks delicious, but you just know that it's a bunch of pork processed to look like a rib. And that's what keeps, the pictures look great. It's got the sauce, got the onions and pickles on this nice roll. But I just can't bring myself to eat one when they come back.
And they've been like, it's like the ever coming back sandwich that like everybody wants, It's like the
weirdest ever. I don't get it.
I'm wondering if it's just a marketing ploy because, there's, what's the guy? He's got the website, the McRib tracker. Like he tracks when it comes and goes.
Yeah.
McDonald's is finally bringing back their McRib to menus across the U.S. after years of demands from desperate super fans of the sandwich. The McRib is set to return to menus nationally on December 2nd, according to leaked documents published on a website called McRibGate. McDonald's confirmed the national return of McRib to Business Insider on Friday. And we have a quote, "The McRib has been a beloved menu item at McDonald's since inception nearly 40 years ago," Linda Van Goshen, McDonald's Vice President of Menu Innovation said in a statement, "There's nothing quite like the taste of McRibs. To our customers, it's become more than a delicious, saucy moment. It's a season, and it's taking the internet by storm. And that's why this year we're proud to serve the McRib nationwide for everyone to enjoy."
The way that nostalgia really distorts people's reality and memory of a thing, like, they may yearn for it just based solely off of how they think they remembered it tasting and feeling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. You forget. They give you enough time to forget how it tasted.
Yeah.
And then you go back and you're like, oh, this is terrible.
And it's like sensationalized in pop culture, the McRib too. Right. Yeah. It reminds me a lot of, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the whole Rick and Morty McDonald's Szechuan sauce debacle.
Yep. Oh, where, yeah.
That's what this really reminds me of. Like, the lines were around McDonald's buildings when they brought back that Szechuan sauce, right, just because it was so sensationalized by Rick and Morty fans. This is like the same thing.
And as predicted, people were hoarding it and selling it on eBay, and it became a very valuable commodity. But to hook on what you said about nostalgia, you know, a lot of memories, the strongest memory that a lot of people have is around food. And McDonald's, you know, plays this little game with their consumers. They'll take it away. You long for it. You get it. And you go, maybe it's not as good as I remember, but boy, I really remember it, really enjoying it. And then, you know, maybe you don't feel so good after you eat it, and then you forget about it, and then they take it away, and then they bring it back.
Like, why did I do this to myself?
Why did I do this to myself? Speaking of chains, Burger King, their UK branch called on its customers to order from its rival McDonald's and other food chains like Taco Bell and Pizza Hut. They did this in solidarity with the thousands of staff these chains employ who may need support amid COVID-19. So you may look at this and say, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my brother, or any kind of thing like that. Whatever you say, you know, McDonald's may be the bigger chain, but I'll tell you, Burger King has the better marketing. They're very tuned in. And McDonald's, you know, their marketing is giant, but it's very broad, and it's very predictable.
Yeah.
Whereas Burger King, they're not afraid to experiment. I don't know if, you know, you out there remember the chickens you could have fight online years ago, Bart?
Yeah, well, I mean, suburban chicken. So basically what Burger King really did is they brought a 32-year-old, or I think he was 32 a few years ago, as the CEO. And he basically just took over and did his thing and figured out, you know, he's not long as CEO. He actually moved on to a equity fund and stuff like that. But smart dude, and just kind of redid their whole strategy fully.
Yeah.
And this is where Burger King really excelled completely. And not only, like, if you look at, you know, from marketing to social to stuff like that, I think Burger King, I mean, Wendy's is on the tear all the time. And I think
Burger King, just on their social media accounts.
On their social media, right? And Burger King does a good job. So I think, you know, obviously McDonald's is just a bigger company, but, you know, you can look at for bang for the buck for a younger audience, you know, they're doing a good job.
Yeah,
and like that message the other day was amazing. You know, like, it makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah, all over. You know, and it's such a simple message. It didn't cost them anything. It probably didn't cost them any business. All it did was brought them goodwill. And every newsletter that I read last week had a blurb about this little story in there. There's nothing better than free press. There's nothing better than free press. Free press that makes you look good.
Right,
right. Remember was it last year? They're like, if they're doing a, if you go buy, we'll buy you a Whopper type of thing.
I remember that
whole idea. Mm-hmm. But the Goodwill stuff is like, you know, at the end of the day, everybody's like, oh, McDonald's is a big company. Sure, but every little McDonald's place is a franchise. It's a small business. Mm-hmm. End of the day, every single one of them is one tiny small business. It's a franchise, still a small business that employs a lot of people. So
yeah, I don't think a lot of people realize that. Now, there are some, you know, outliers. There's like mega franchisees who own, you know, 10 stores. I mean, that's a guy who walked in with a lot of money to begin with. But you have some family-owned McDonald's, you know, and I was in the franchise business years ago, and there's a lot of hoops and a lot of rules that you have to follow, because the one thing about a chain is they always want to promote consistency. But the problem is that if you own a McDonald's in one city and you own a McDonald's in a different city, the rules there are a lot different about running a business. The easiest one to explain is signage. So if you have a McDonald's in Northeast Philadelphia, they'll let you put a sign out on the road and put up a standard McDonald's. But if you try to open a McDonald's in Medford Lakes, to give an example, I don't know if this is specific or not, but a community like Medford Lakes will say, you need to have your sign, but you can't, it can't flash, it can't do this. There has to be wood. There has to be some kind of organic elements. I know when I was in the franchise business, we had to craft our logo out of wood and make it match the rest of the center. And that just goes along with all the other rules and regulations that you have to follow, while also following the rules and regulations of the master chain, the master franchisee. So running a business like that is tough. Everybody thinks, oh, they make a lot of money, but it costs a lot of money to run these
businesses. Yeah, they don't. I mean, I worked at, when I was younger, I worked at Burger King, and the family I owned it, they own like four, and they're great. They're amazing people, but the rules you have to follow, it's bonkers.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you don't follow the rules, you're penalized, or they could take your franchise license away, which is devastating. You might as well close your doors at that point.
Yeah. John, it's
that's also the reason why you can't just go into Burger King and have the one up the corner sell pizza, because you feel like selling pizza. Like, you just cannot do that.
Oh my gosh. You know what? Is that why McDonald's only has the crispy snack wraps at some McDonald's? There is actually this huge conspiracy, kind of off topic. Like, McDonald's took off their chicken snack wraps off the menu once the pandemic started, and only select restaurants in the country, by demand of their customers, are adding them back. It's like this huge thing because they were so popular.
Yeah, so it's actually not a conspiracy. If you look at every single advertisement from all these restaurants, it says we're available, meaning not every franchise will carry them. It's discretion of the discretion of what you carry, what they think it's popular in town. Like, there's some changes, but they're all like, that's just part of the deal.
Yeah. I mean, there's also regional cuisine to take into consideration. Correct. There's probably some sauces that you can get down south that you can't get up in the north. That's peculiarities of the audience, of the customer. And also, like as Bart said, the discretion of the franchisee, meaning he may look at the one as bottom line and say, it's not worth for me to carry this. But the other thing that McDonald's all seem to have in common is they have the broken ice cream machines. And there's some guy that set up that website to track the broken ice cream machines and figure out which ones was working.
Well, which is genius.
And speaking of, I don't know, Brittany, you saw TikTok yesterday, there's a guy that was just playing around. He's like, it doesn't matter who wins or loses yesterday, the ice cream machine at McDonald's will still be broken.
that's very consistent.
Some guy wrote on Twitter, he goes, yo man, he goes, you know, that ice cream machine tracker is just trying to track employees who are McDonald's employees that are slacking on the job. I was like, no, those things are always broken.
Yeah.
Yes, they
it's
are.
So and funny.
Stuck to fix or clean or do anything with.
They're just not very efficient for the amount of business, especially, everything's drive-through. It's probably even worse.
It's such a universal experience. It's so funny. I love it.
That's right. John, we just talked about McRib and franchises for
longer than we talked about.
Wait, and you know what's funny about it, John? We were literally on the same wavelength because I put that Burger King story in the newsletter. Moments ago, perfect. Like before we even perfect. Talked about it, I put it in there.
Welcome to the preview.
Our minds.
Welcome to our food podcast. All right, so we're going to wrap this up, ladies and gentlemen. We hope you like our new format. If you have any comments or feedback, we're going to try to publish this on Fridays. I know the last one came out on Tuesday because it was kind of an impromptu thing. So you got two episodes in 1 week. But for next, moving forward, we're going to put this one out on Friday and then consecutive Fridays after that. If you have any feedback on that, reach out to us on our social media at Sumo Heavy or check us out at sumoheavy.com. And don't forget, we have our other podcast, In the Ring, which we interview e-commerce leaders and give you actionable advice to help you run your e-commerce business. Check that out. You can get that wherever you get your podcast. Guys, any closing thoughts?
I am hungry for fast food.
Yeah, me too. I'm actually, I'm going to get a McRib and I'm going to review it on this podcast. How about that?
Live, yes.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Love that.
We got to all sacrifice for the team. All right, that is your e-commerce minute for this week. We'll see you on the internet, I guess, next week, right? Next week.
Yeah.
I got to come up with another catchphrase. All right. Bye, everyone.